All right, Rabbosai, good morning. Let's begin. So today's daf is Nun Beis. Nun Beis, we are picking up from Nun Aleph Amud Beis. You have a little bit to catch up on Nun Aleph. A little bit to catch up on Nun Aleph. We left off with Tana Rabbanan, which is 2, 4, 6, 7 lines up from the bottom. Last word on the line, Tana Rabbanan. So Tana Rabbanan. Tana Rabbanan. Shavuye Malchus, Harehen Kishavuyin. So literally the Braisa says that Shavuye Malchus, Kishavuyin Ganuvi, those captured by the Malchus, those captured ultimately again by the monarchy, are like those taken captives by thieves. So the Gemara says, on the other hand, Harehen Kishavuyin, Ganuvi Listos, Eno Kishavuyin. On the other hand, those who are taken by listim, armed robbers, are not like Shavuyin. Now look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says, Shavuyin Malchus, Noshim Sheshava HaMelech L'Tashmish. These are women that were captured by the king, I guess for the sake of serving in his harem. Harehin Kishavuyin. They are like regular captives. Umutarn LeBa'alayin. They are permitted to their husbands. On the other hand, that what he calls Ginuve Listos, those who are stolen by robbers, ultimately are not like Shavuyin, which means that I will say they would not be permitted to their husbands. So the Gemara says, Ay Vahatanya Ipcha, but we learn just the opposite. To which the Gemara says, Malchus, Malchus, Lokasha. So truth is, it's not a contradiction. Why? Haba Malchus Achashverosh, Haba Malchus Ben Netzer. So it's actually very interesting. So the Gemara says that it depends on the monarchy. In a Malchus like Achashverosh, where a woman has virtually no hope of ever becoming queen, so we assume that she is violated against her will. But in a Malchus like Ben Netzer, we'll talk about Ben Netzer. Ben Netzer was a robber who was exceptionally successful. Everybody has to be good at something. So he was exceptionally successful, and he ransacked like a whole bunch of cities, and he essentially created for himself like a little fiefdom. See, he was like a king. So in a king like Ben Netzer, a woman knows that it's possible that perhaps she would be taken by Ben Netzer as a wife, and therefore, again, the Maisa, the concern is that she may go ahead and engage willingly in Tashmish, in the act of relations with him. Of course, if she engages willingly, then Lemaisa, again, that prohibits her to her husband. So the Gemara says it depends on the Malchus. So listus alistus lokasha haba ben netzer haba listin da ama. Similarly, again, the listus alistus is also not a kasha because it depends on the listus. One is the listus like ben netzer. So a man like ben netzer, where again he was a man of incredible reputation, and although he was a criminal, he amassed for himself a fortune and a little bit of an empire. So a woman may be tempted to submit willingly to him, ultimately, again, in order to be his wife, in order to be taken from him as a wife. On the other hand, again, regular listim, regular robbers, so no woman is going to want to be associated with that, and therefore, again, we assume that she was violated against the will. And we'll say, obviously, this whole Gemara is not really lemaisa for us, because remember, the Gemara yesterday subscribed to the idea of kol shetchilasa ba'onis yisofa baratzon, that even if the beginning of the act, even if the is onis, is against her will, even if over time she submits willingly, lemaisa, again, we still look at the act as an act of onis. To take it a step further, what is also interesting over here is in these cases, the concern is that perhaps she will submit willingly, almost out of a sense of yeush, that perhaps she's never going to be redeemed. If she's never going to be redeemed, then perhaps she just has to make the best of this particular life that she has in front of her. The Gemara goes on. The Gemara says, uben Netzer, Hasim Karli Melech, Vacha Karli Listim. I don't understand with Ben Netzer. Here, in one place they call him a Melech, and in one place they call him a Listim. So which one is it? In Gabi Achashverosh, Listim Hava. Gabi Ach, God bless you. Gabi Listim Da Amo Melechu. So we'll say, like most things, it depends on who he's compared to. So compared to a king like Achashverosh, he's just simply a robber. But compared ultimately to other Listim, he's like a Melech. Good. Ubikohenes Adrenalim Limdina Seich. So remember, the Mishnah said that in the Ksuva, in the ksuva of a kohenes, a husband promises that if you are taken captive, I will redeem you and return you back to your city. Remember, again, the wife of a kohen who is violated is prohibited to her husband. So as such, again, he says, I will redeem you and I'll return you back home. Says the Gemara, Amar Abaye, Amana the kohen gadol is an interesting case. Let's say a kohen gadol married an amana. Obviously, in a legal marriage. What's the halacha? Now she's taken captive. So what's the halacha? Chayiv liftosa. Abaye says you have to redeem her. Why? Shani kori ba ubekohenes adrunach lemdinaseich. Because Rabbi Abaye says you could fulfill the tanai in the ksuva. The tanai in the ksuva was that if you are taken captive, I will redeem you to your city. So therefore, again, even though she cannot remain married to him, but what? He can absolutely return her back home. On the other hand, top of Nun Beis, Mamzeres Unasina li Yisrael, On the other hand, when it comes to a mamzeres and a nesina, so I'll say, remember, in the case of mamzeres and nesina, this is a situation over here where another illegal marriage, in that case, again, the Yisrael husband is not obligated to go ahead and redeem her. Why? Because he cannot fulfill the phrase, and I will return you as my wife. So Abaye says something very interesting. Abaye says, essentially, when the Tanai and the Ksuva can be fulfilled, even if the marriage was illegal, he still has an obligation to redeem her. So for example, in the case of a kohen who married an Amara, illegal marriage, but remember, what's the clause in the Ksuva? If you are taken captive, I will redeem you and return you back to your family. So the truth is, can he fulfill that clause? Absolutely, yes. On the other hand, if it's Yisrael married to a mamzeres, that's an illegal marriage also. Remember, the clause in a Yisrael's ksuva is, I will redeem you and I will return you to my home, meaning you'll remain my wife. That, of course, is impossible in this case because it's a prohibited marriage. And therefore, Abaye suggests that he's not chayiv to go ahead and redeem her. Now, listen, I want to point something out. Remember again, even in these cases when we say he's not obligated to redeem her, so there is still a mitzvah pigyon shvuyim, right? The mitzvah pigyon shvuyim applies to everyone. The difference in these cases is that when one's wife is taken captive, the sole responsibility for redemption devolves upon the husband. That's the chilik over here. But obviously, we say like he doesn't have to redeem her. Okay, you know, hatzlacha rabba. You know, good luck with that. Then, of course, the obligation of pigyon shvuyim kicks in, and the husband also has an obligation of pigyon shvuyim. Perhaps just he wouldn't have the obligation to foot the entire bill for the pigyon shvuyim. So the Gemara goes right to Rava. Rava, on the other hand, says no. Kol she iser shvuya garam la chayev liftosa. Rava says no. In the case of the kohen, it is only when the fact that she was taken captive prohibits her to her husband that the kohen husband is obligated to redeem her. However, davar acher garam la. But if there is something else that causes the prohibition from the wife to the husband, eino chayev liftosa. Therefore, Rava says it's not the fact that she was taken captive that prohibits the amana to her kohen gadol husband, but rather what is the fact that she's an amana that prohibits the amana to the kohen gadol husband. Therefore, Rava suggests that in that case, he is not obligated to redeem her. So the Mara says, "Leimet kitanai." So we'll say fundamental machlokes Abai and Rava. Now, I want to be clear; they both agree in the case of the Yisrael to the mamzeres that you're not obligated, that the husband is not obligated to redeem her. Their machlokes is in the case of the kohen gadol who marries the amana. Abai says you have to redeem her because you could fulfill the clause in the ksuva of I will redeem you and return you back to your home. Whereas Rava says that you are not obligated to redeem her because, again, it's not the fact that she was taken captive that creates the prohibition, but rather it was a pre-existing condition. So let me get that on. It says, Machlokes Tanoim. Hamadres Ishtov Inishpis. What's another interesting case? Let's say a man makes a neder prohibiting his wife from getting any benefits from him. So we will see later on that if you make a neder like that, prohibiting your wife from getting any benefit from you, that is grounds for immediate divorce and payout to ksuva. Because we'll say, if a man goes out and says that his wife can't get any benefit from him, there's really no more marriage. So let's say he went ahead and he made the neder, and then right after he made the neder, she was taken captive. Now the shaila is what? The shaila is he obligated to redeem her? Rabbi Eliezer Omer Po Devino Sin Laksuvasa. Rabbi Eliezer says, you have to redeem her. I ain't give her a ksuva. Rabbi Yeshua Omer, no sin laksuvasa ve'ina podev. Rabbi Yeshua says, no, you give her a ksuva, and you're not obligated to redeem her. Meaning, in other words, that essentially once you have gone ahead and made that neder, pretty much the marriage is over. And now when she's taken captive, you give her ksuva, give her her money, but the husband is not obligated. Rabbi Nasan. Rabbi Nasan said, Sha'ati Yesumchus. Kisham Rabbi Yeshua, no sin laksuva, safina poda. So we'll say, Rabbi Nassan said, I once asked Sumchus, when Rabbi Yeshua said that the husband just gives her the ksuba and is not obligated to redeem her, what's the case? Is that kish shehedira ulubasof nishbis? Is that a case of where he first made the neder and then she was taken captive? Oh, benishbis ulubasof hedira. Or is that true even in a case of where she was first taken captive and then he made the neder? Va'amrli lo shamati. And Sumcha said to me, the truth is, I don't know. I never heard anything about this. However, v'nirin dvarim, she'edira ula basof nishbis. But Sumcha said, intuitively, I would assume that Rabbi Yeshua's position, that all you have to do is give the ksuva and walk away, only applies in a case of where first there was the neder, and then she was taken captive. Why? Di'i amrit nishbis ula basof edira. Because if you say that ultimately what? That she was taken captive first, and then the neder was made, Asila Rume, because they will say, then you know what could happen? Every single husband who is just does not really want to be involved in the pigyon shvuyim of his wife, which of course opens up a whole other dynamic, right? If a husband doesn't want to be involved in this, but in any event, every single husband who doesn't want to be involved with the piyum shvuyim of his wife could simply, once she's taken captive, just make a nether, ultimately prohibiting any benefits from you, and therefore you don't have to redeem her. Therefore, Simcha said, I never heard anything about this, but it would appear to me that Rabbi Yoshua's position, that you just have to give her ksuva, and you're not obligated for redemption, only applies in a case where the nether preceded her captivity. So the Gemara says, my love, b'madir eishes kohen kamifligi. Are we not talking about a case of an eishes kohen, right? Where again, the case of the almana married to the kohen gadol, and that's the case of where the kohen gadol made the nether prohibiting his wife, ultimately to go and get hanoah from him. Va'abayi da'amar krabi Eliezer. And Abaye Rabosai holds, like Rabbi Eliezer, remember Rabbi Eliezer holds that even in the case of a neder, you're still obligated to go ahead and redeem her and pay the ksuba. So Abaye holds like Rabbi Lazar, V'Rabba da'amar Rabbi Yoshua, and Rabbi holds like Rabbi Yoshua, to which the Gemara says, no, not necessarily. Hachamai askinan, oh, this is interesting, what's the case? Kigon shenadra ihi v'kiyem lahu. I will say, what's the case here? The case is not where the husband made the neder, but rather what? It's where the wife made the neder. But I will say, remember, we know that in order for a wife's neder to be upheld, what has to happen? The husband has to be mekayim it. He has to uphold it. He has to affirm it. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Eliezer, Savar, who knows sin etzba bein shineha. So Rabbi Eliezer says like this, if a wife makes a neder not to get any benefit from her husband, then what? Then lemaisa again, and the husband has to confirm it. I mean, he does say that is confirmation. Who knows? He put his finger between her teeth. In other words, that he put his finger between, she bit down on his finger, but that's why? Because he put his finger there. Also, that's another way of saying, he caused this. He didn't have to affirm the nether. He could have negated this entire thing. He caused it. Now, because he caused it, therefore what? He is responsible. Because he's responsible, if she's taken captive, so he has to redeem her and also give for her ksuva. On the other hand, Rabbi Yeshua Savar, he nasna etzba bein shinah. Rabbi Yeshua says, no, look, she made the neder. Yes, it's true, he confirmed it, but she is the one who made the neder. Therefore, again, she put her own finger in between her teeth. She is responsible. Therefore, Rabbi Yeshua says, all the husband has to do is what? Pay her ksuva, but he has no obligation to redeem her. So Mara says, he nasna etzba bein shinah. Ihi nasna etzba bein shinah. Ksuva maya vidita. So first of all, Rabbi Yeshua, if you're right, that she put her finger between her teeth, then Lemaisa again, why is there a ksuva? Maybe there shouldn't even be a ksuva in that kind of case. V'su, furthermore, Am Rabbi Nasan, sha'alti es sumchus. And furthermore, remember, Rabbi Nasan said before, I asked sumchus, ki yesham Rabbi Yeshua, no sein la ksuva, savei na poda, kishi edir lebesof nishbis, o kishi nishbis lebesof edir. Remember, Rabbi Nasan asked sumchus when Rabbi Yeshua said that Lemaisa, a husband is not obligated to redeem his wife. In the nether case. Rather, he's only obligated to give her ksuva. I asked Sumchus, what was the order of events? Was it that he first made the nether, and there was the nether first, and then she was taken captive, or was captivity preceded the nether? V'amar lo shamati. And Sumchus said, I don't know, I never heard this. Remember, it's just repeating what we said before. The Gemara says, v'id nadr ihi. And if you're talking about a case where it's not that he made the nether, but rather what? She made the nether. Mali hidira ulubasof nishbis. Mali nishbis ulubasof hidira. If it's her that made the neder, if it's the wife, who cares what the order is? What does it matter if captivity preceded the neder or the neder preceded the captivity? Rather, the Gemara says we have to kind of get rid of this idea. Ella liolam da'ajir. So we're back to where we started, which means what? No, it's not a case of where she made the neder. The case Rabbi say is where he made the neder. So we'll say the shaila now we're back to is a case of where what? Where lemaisa, a husband made a neder prohibiting his wife from getting any benefit from him. Then she is taken captive. So the shaila is, what are his obligations vis-a-vis her? Knowing that when a husband makes a neder to go ahead for his wife not to get benefit from him, that's grounds for divorce. That pretty much is dissolution of the marriage right then and there. So the shaila now, she's not taken captive. What are his obligations vis-a-vis her? So Rabbi Eliezer said, remember, he has to redeem her and give her a ksuva, which is another way of saying redeem her and divorce her. Rabbi Yeshua says, no, just give her a ksuva, divorce her. And she's on her own, you have no obligation to redeem her. To which the Gemara says, Abaye mitaris etamei, v'Rava mitaris etamei. So we'll say, both Abaye and Rava will have their different versions. Abaye mitaris etamei, so Abaye will say like this, Amar lekohen gadol, kuli amilo pligi dechayiv liftosa. But Abaye will say like this, if an Amon is married to a kohen gadol, and then she's taken captive. Everyone will agree that what? That he has to redeem her. Now remember, Moshe said, it's a shitas Abaye, because Abaye holds that since he could fulfill the clause in the ksuva. Remember, what's the clause in the ksuva in a Kohen's wife? What's the clause in the ksuva? I will go ahead and I'll redeem you, and I'll return you to your city. He can do that. So because he could fulfill that clause, he's obligated to redeem her. That's number one. Number two, Mamzeris and Usin Li Yisrael Kuli Amalo Pligi De'enu Chayv of Dosa. And if Yisrael is married to a Mamzeris, everyone agrees that what? He is not obligated to redeem her for the simple reason that he cannot fulfill the Tanai in the Ksuva that says that she will return her to him as his wife. Madir Eishas Koi Nami Kuli Amalo Pligi De'chayv of Dosa. They both say similarly, if a husband makes a neder, and this is the Kohen Gadol case, Madir Eishes Kohen, she makes a neder ultimately again, prohibiting her from getting any benefits from him, and then she's taken captive, everyone also agrees that what? Techayiv Liftosa. Dahainu Amar LeKohen Gadol. And also in Abaye's version, so again, if a Kohen makes a neder, prohibiting his wife from getting any benefit from him, and then she's taken captive, he still has to redeem her. Why, Rabosai? Because remember, in Abaye's model, a Kohen making a neder that his wife may not get any benefit from him is no different than what case? No different than the case of a Kohen Gadol married to an Amana. Both are situations of where the marriage has to be dissolved. But the same way that a Kohen Gadol has to redeem his wife, his Amana wife, so too again, even if the husband made dinner, there is still to redeem his wife. So keep Ligi, where does the machlokis come up according to Abaye? B'madir Eishes Yisrael. Oh, the case over here is where a Yisrael made a neder prohibiting his wife from getting any benefit from him, and then she is taken captive. Rabbi Eliezer Azil Basra Meikara. Basra, listen to this. So Rabbi Eliezer goes Basra Meikara. Basra Meikara means what? Basra Meikara means we look at the moment they get married. And at the moment they get married, was he able to fulfill the clause that if you are redeemed, I will restore you as my wife? As long as at the beginning of that marriage, that clause was, well, I guess Fakir Rabbi Eliezer will call it enforceable, then Lamaisi is obligated to honor it, even if what? Even if what? Even if circumstances change over the course of the marriage that make the fulfillment of that clause impossible. For example, he takes a neder sometime over the course of marriage that she may not get any benefits from him. So obviously at that point in time, even after he redeems her, he cannot return her to him as his wife because she's prohibited to him. But Lamaisi, again, because at the beginning of the marriage the clause was enforceable, therefore, that, essentially what Rabbi Eliezer says, is his obligation to redeem her is determined at the first moment of their marriage. As long as it's enforceable then Lamaisa is enforceable for the duration of the marriage, even if circumstances change. On the other hand, Rabbi Yeshua Azul Basir Basov. On the other hand, Rabbi Yeshua goes, Basir Basov, both say Basir Basov means what? We look at right now. We determine the enforceability of the redemption clause by the circumstances present at the time when redemption becomes necessary. So since, again, at the time when redemption becomes necessary, which is now, she's taken captive, she is prohibited to him because of the neder. Therefore what? He's not obligated to redeem her. He gives her ksuva, and ultimately, again, he is free from this. So we'll say that is Abaye's version. Rava mitaris etame. Rava goes according to his reasoning. He says, I'm one of the Kohen Gadol. So I'll say Rava says, no. Remember, this is Rava disagreeing with Abaye from the beginning of the sugya. So he says, and whether it's an amana to a Kohen Gadol or a Yisrael marrying a mamzeres, so I'll say, any case of an illegal marriage, there is no obligation of redemption. Any case of illegal marriage, no obligation of redemption. Ki pligi, when is there a machlokes? Bemadir. In the case of the neder, husband makes a neder. So now the fundamental machlokes case is in a situation where a husband makes a neder, prohibiting his wife from getting any benefits from him. And this is the fundamental machlokes. Rabbi Eliezer Azul Basra Meikara. Rabbi Eliezer says we look at the enforceability of the redemption clause by the circumstances of the marriage at its inception. So since again at the beginning of the marriage the clause was enforceable, therefore even if circumstances change, the clause is still enforceable. Rabbi Yeshua Azul Basra Basof, and Rabbi Yeshua at the end of the day looks at present circumstances now to see whether or not ultimately redemption would be obligatory. Okay, I will say. So therefore, the Gemara ends off over here with the machlokis between Abaye and Rava. So I will say, you should just know that it seems to be that we paskin at the end of the day like Rava, and therefore again in the case of an amana to a Kohen Gadol or in the case of a mamzeres to Yisrael, there would not be an obligation of redemption. So in any case where the marriage itself was illegal, there is no chiyuv for pidyon. All right. So the Gemara goes weiter. Nishpis chayev v'tosa. Tanu Rabbanan. Well, so this is actually very interesting as well. Nishpis b'chayev baila. Let's say a woman was taken captive during her husband's lifetime. The acherkach meis baila. And then her husband died. So hikir ba baila, yoshin chayev v'tosa. As long as the husband was aware that his wife was taken captive during his lifetime, so the meaning, in other words, his awareness, the Gemara is suggesting over here, triggers an obligation for redemption. Once the obligation for redemption was triggered during the lifetime of the husband, that trickles down to the inheritors of the estate. They too have an obligation to go ahead and redeem this woman. I'll both say, remember, that's true even if this woman is not their mother. Right? It was just their father's wife. Essentially, because I'll say what the Gemara is saying over here is that the idea to redeem a wife is a financial obligation. Once that financial obligation has been triggered during the lifetime of the husband, after his death, that financial obligation trickles down to the estate, and therefore the inheritors must redeem her. On the other hand, hikir babayla yoshin chayav mtoso. Lo hikir babayla in yoshin chayav mtoso. On the other hand, if the husband was not aware that his wife was taken captive, I don't know, whatever the situation is there, right? He thought she was just out, whatever, right, for a week. Right? So he did not know that she was taken captive. Well, so no, again, all kidding aside, we just talked about Leitzanos beforehand. All kidding aside, the idea of here is, let's say, Mom, he's on his deathbed, and she's taken captive while he's on his deathbed. See, he never knew about this. Then what? In Yarshin Chayav Nechtosa. Then in that case, again, the inheritors are not obligated to redeem her. So Levi wanted to act in accordance with this particular Raisa. Amrle Rav. Hachi Amar Habibi. So Rav said, my uncle said the following, Les Hilchasaki Hamas Nisa. The halacha does not follow the ruling that we just stated. Ela Kiha. Rather, the halacha follows the following Raisa. This Sanya. Nishpes la'achar misas bayla, ena yisumim chayav and liftosa. Remember, I will say, the first brisa makes the obligation for redemption by the estate, by the inheritors, a function of, what we'll call it, spousal recognition. That as long as the husband knew that his wife was taken captive during his lifetime, then at the end of the day, the obligation trickles down to the Yashma. If the husband never knew about it, then the inheritors have no obligation. So Rava comes along and says, that's not the halacha. That's not the halacha. Rather, what is the halacha? The halacha is the following. If a wife is taken captive after the death of her husband, the orphans, the inheritors, have no obligation to go ahead and redeem her. Not only that, furthermore, not only that, but even if the husband was alive and while she was taken captive, once he dies, the obligation to redeem her goes with him to the grave. In other words, Rabbi say that the obligation to redeem a wife is upon who? Is upon the husband himself. So what? Because remember, Rabbi say this is a tenai, it's a clause in the ksuva, and the ksuva says that lemaisa, again, I will redeem you and return you to as my wife, which means that the moment that I can't return you to you as my wife, then lamaisa again, I'm not obligated to redeem her. Which almost like fits in perfectly with what we said earlier, that if he can't return you to you as my wife, then at the end, like we said before, by the Amana Kohen Gadol, Mamzer Sidi Yisrael, if we can't resume a marital life, then lamaisa has no obligation of redemption. So the Gemara says, so therefore, lamaisa, I'm sorry?
What about the Yisrael of Kohen? Return to the city. Back to our
father's. Oh, so remember again, that goes back to Rava. Rava was the one who said that it could only be the Isser Shivuya. If it's only if the Isser Shivuya creates the inability for the Kohen to continue in his marriage. But if the Isser was there prior to becoming a Shivuya, there's an obligation for redemption.
Is the obligation talking about the monetary obligation?
Monetary, correct. Okay.
And for the ones who hold that it is a Chiyu, are they just saying the money comes from the estate?
Is all about the money.
And the money from the estate.
Correct. Who's obligated? I mean, the money from the estate. Correct. Husband has to take it out of his pocket to pay for redemption. The yisomim, if you say the yisomim have to, then it comes out of their estate. Correct.
Comes their own money.
No. It's all estate money. All estate money. Yisomim would never be obligated to redeem their father's wife from their own money. Let me clarify this point. But so whenever we say about orphans having to go ahead and redeem someone, let's say their father's wife, it's always estate money. Because the assumption is that since it was a financial obligation on the father, therefore the Havamina was that even if the father's dead, that obligation still remains on his money. But obviously, if there's no estate money, let's say the father died penniless, then there's no conversation. Then everyone would agree, that the Yesomim have no personal obligation. I mean, let me be clear. They have an obligation, just like every Jew has an obligation to redeem captives that they know about, but they have no specific obligation to totally bear the financial burden for this particular redemption. Shabbos says, so therefore, Rava comes along and says that the halacha is like this last in Braisa, which says that the obligation to redeem the spouse is only when the husband himself is alive. But if he's not alive, whether he recognized it or didn't recognize it is irrelevant. If he's not alive, that obligation never devolves upon the Yisomim. Tanu Rabbanon. Nishpis vayimavakshim enu adasar bedamel. So what's another interesting case? Let's say a woman was taken captive, and her captors were requesting 10 times her value. 10 times her value. So what's the halacha? Pam rishona poda. The first time you redeem her. Mikan ve'elech ratza poda, ratza'ina poda. This is interesting. Right? After the first time, if you want to redeem her, you can. If you don't want to redeem her, you don't have to. I was about to say that the idea over here is, it's not a good Shabbat brachas v'art. But you understand, the idea over here is that we're talking about an exorbitant amount of money. Rashi says, what does it mean, ratza'ina poda? Delotakinur ba rabbana elechat piyon. In other words, the enactment, or the rabbinic enactment, the takana, that a husband has to redeem his wife, that there is one redemption per customer, right? One redemption per marriage. If she keeps getting taken captive, the husband is not obligated to keep on redeeming her. The Gemara goes weiter. Mikan ve'elach ratzpod, I find. Reb Shimon Gamliel says, no. What says is, Amad Beis, ain't very important halacha, ain't poldin es ha-shvuyin yoser al-kedei demehen. Reb Shimon Gamliel says, famous shita. Well, that's actually, this sug is really in Gittin. We'll talk about it extensively in Gittin. You do not redeem captives for more than they're worth. Mipnei tikkun ha'olam, for the benefit of society. What does that mean, mipnei tikkun ha'olam? So Rashi says over here, Rashi says, shelo yargilu lahalos al demehen. In order that, remember what I'll say, the problem is that if you go ahead and you start redeeming people for much more than they're worth, then at the end of the day, Lemaisa, you create a market for captives. Create a market. I should have extra tomorrow. We create a market for captives. So if you create a market for captives, you're going to incentivize hostage taking. Rabosa, I will tell you, you should know, lest you think that this is not contemporarily relevant, when the opportunity to redeem Gilad Shalit came along, there was a major, major dispute among rabbinic authorities in Eretz Yisrael as to whether or not the swap should take place. And many felt that as difficult as it was to say this, that the swap, the prisoner exchange, should not take place because it was a situation of Podin Shvuyin Yoser Mikadei Demehen. And if terrorists know that for capturing a soldier, they can get a ridiculous amount in return, it's going to incentivize future kidnappings. Of course, this is the great tension within Klal Yisrael, because what are we known for? We are Rachmanim B'nei Rachmanim. We are compassionate people, the sons of compassionate people. So the notion that we could go ahead and bring home a son of Israel, there's a part of us that says it doesn't matter what the cost is, we're going to go ahead and do it. On the other hand, from a practical perspective, Shimon Gamliel says, you can't redeem captives for more than their value because you run the risk of then incentivizing the kidnapping market. He goes on, but again, what do you see from here? That if the captors are asking a legitimate price, however you define a legitimate price, you see that you redeem her, even though what Rabosa, even though, let's say, the amount that they're asking for is more than the value of her ksuva. In general, the assumption is that a husband's financial liability towards his wife is kind of, there's a ceiling. That ceiling amount is the ksuva. So I would have thought that if a wife is taken captive, the most you have to go ahead and pay for her is the amount of her ksuva. Mr. Brown, I know this probably sounds strange coming in the middle. You should always redeem your wife. It's not, I'm taking this out of context here. The idea over here is I would have thought that the ceiling on this is the ksuva amount. However, you see from here that, no, you redeem her for whatever her value is, or a mini. So Gemara is the kasha. Nishpis v'ayu mevak shimimenu ada sara b'ksuvasa. So I'll say again, the Gemara raises the kasha that if a wife was taken captive and her captives were asking 10 times, ada sara b'ksuvasa, 10 times the value value for a ksuva. Now, we'll say, now that is a lot of money. So 10 times the value for ksuva, pam rishon apoda. The first time you could redeem her. Mikan ve'ilech ratza apoda, ratza in apoda. After the first time, if you want to redeem her, you can. If you don't want to redeem her, you don't have to. Another Jabos say, so what that's saying is the obligation to redeem her is only one time. On the other hand, Reb Shimon Gamliel Omer, im hayopir kuna kineged ksuva sapoda, ve'imlav ein apoda. Reb Shimon Gamliel says that if her redemption amount is equal to her ksuva, then you could redeem her. But if it's not, meaning if it's more, then you're not obligated to redeem her. To which the Gemara says, Reb Shimon Gamliel trei kuli istu. Reb Shimon Gamliel has two kulas. He has two. He ultimately has two leniencies. What are his two leniencies? Number one, that you're not obligated to redeem her for more than her value. And number two, you're not obligated to redeem her for more than the value of her ksuva. So those are the two leniencies that he has. Fine. I'm sorry, kulas for the husband. They're financial kulas for the husband because it sets a ceiling on how much you're obligated to pay for her redemption.
There's kumar that you'll have to do it the second time, though.
Correct. There'll be how much you have to do it the second time, but the kula is that there is a financial ceiling on the amount you have to pay. That is correct. So, laksa chayav l'raposa. So, also listen to this. Next thing in the Mishnah was if she becomes ill, you're obligated to pay for her doctor bills. Now, and this is very interesting. Tan Rabbanan, amana nizonas minichse yisomim, a widow is supported from the estate of the orphans. We'll say, now remember again, so let me clarify this point that Ben Sion made before. Estate of the orphans mean what? Remember, when we speak about orphans, orphans are not necessarily the children of the widow. It could very well be that the children are someone totally different. Someone totally different, meaning children you have from another marriage. The idea over here is that an almana is supported from the property from the property of her deceased husband. I want to be clear. Nichse Yisomim doesn't mean the orphan's own personal property, but rather it means what? The estate property. So the widow is supported from the estate property. So the Gemara says, Utsricha refuah harihi kemizona. So we'll say, let's say now she needs some type of medical intervention. Let's say she needs medical intervention. So what's the halacha? Where does that come? That's like mizona. That's like food. So the same way that her food is given to her from the estate, support is given to her from the estate, so medical needs are also given to her from the estate. Rabbi Shimon Leal says, no, listen to this. This is actually very interesting. Refuah sheyesh la kitzva, nisrapas miksuvasa, she'en la kitzva, harihi kimizonos. So we'll say now, the Gemara, Rabbi Shimon Leal suggests that it depends what type of refuah she needs. If she needs a specific course of treatment that is defined, so it's a defined treatment, which for our purposes also means that it has a defined price tag, so then that comes from the ksuva. Any set amounts of things that she needs comes from the ksuva. But anything that, let's say she needs ongoing care. So we'll say ongoing care has the status of mizonos. The status of, why? Because we'll say mizonos represents any uncapped amount of expenses. So any uncapped amount of expenses ultimately are like mizonos, and therefore would just simply come from the estates. This is very interesting. So if she has a chronic condition for which she's going to require constant care, that's like mizonos, it comes from the estate. If she has a one-time condition, so then that's going to come from her ksuva. I was about to say again, just you understand the logic behind it, just like the ksuva is a set amount, so any of her needs that are set amounts come from ksuva, mizonos is an open-ended amount, that's her support, so any open-ended items also come from the estate like mizonos. Rabbi Yonasan, asu akazastam beretz yisrael kirefua she'im la kitzva. So I said, listen to this. So Rabbi Yochanan said that they made bloodletting. So once you understand, bloodletting was a very popular, bloodletting was often the answer to everything. Right? Do you have a problem? Just do bloodletting. So in Eretz Yisrael, bloodletting was like a refua she'im la kitzva, was like medical treatment without limit, right? Medical treatment without limit. And therefore, now uncapped medical treatment. And therefore, again, lemaisa, ongoing medical treatment. And therefore, lemaisa, again, that would come from the zonos. That would be like sustenance. That would come from the estate, not her ksuva. But let's say, listen to this story. Krivi Rabbi Yochanan, Havale Isas Abba, Davatzicha Refua Kalyoma. So also listen to this. Rabbi Yochanan's relatives, now Rabbi Yochanan's a great sage. So his relatives come to him. And what's the problem? These relatives, these children, these inheritors, their father died, and the father left behind a widow, not their mother. So they came to Rabbi Yochanan because they had a problem that she needed refuah kol yoma. Now, here's the issue. The issue is she needed ongoing medical treatment, and what was going to happen? the children were a little bit concerned because they felt that the assets of the estate were going to be totally consumed by paying for her medical treatment. So what did Rabbi Yochanan say? He said, "Asul kamei Rabbi Yochanan, amar lehu, ezel kotzla midi lerofe. I have a very good idea. Go to the doctor and work out a deal with the doctor." And essentially say to the doctor like this: "Okay, this woman, this widow has this condition. She's going to require treatment for the next 20 years. How much money? Give me a price for the entirety of that service. I don't want to pay you daily, and maybe I'll even pay you a little bit of a premium if you go ahead and you give me a defined price for all of those services." And I will say, now what does that do? What does that do? That makes it into a fixed amount. Oh, if suddenly medical services become a fixed amount, sounds like an insurance company, right? If medical could become a fixed amount, then what, Rabbi? Say, then what? Then suddenly it comes from the her ksuva as opposed to coming from the estate. So it's a great chap. Rabbi, so listen to how this story ends. Afterwards, Rabbi Yochanan was very upset. He says, "Asinu atzmenu ke'arche adayanin. I feel so low. I feel like I've sold him. You know what I feel like? I feel like a lawyer, right? Mamish, like I feel like I've hit, I'm sorry, right? I feel like, now I will say, now understand what the Gemara means over here. When the Gemara is not a disparaging of lawyers. Arche Hadayana, what the Gemara is saying over here is that I feel like what I've done is I've manipulated the system. And Rabbi Yochanan said, I'm supposed to be better than that. My job is not to manipulate the system. Because what he did is, he really did. I mean, again, I will say, is it legal? Of course it's legal. Is it what the spirit of halacha intended? Absolutely not. So he says, I feel like I've made myself like a lawyer, and I've manipulated the system. He says, the Gemara says, so meikar my suffer, lebasof my suffer. So what was Rabbi Yochanan thinking in the beginning when he gave this advice, and why did he ultimately feel guilty about it? To which the Gemara says, meikara suffer mubsarachalot tisale. In the beginning, he thought, look, this is my family. There's an obligation to help out family. And therefore what? And therefore I wanted to help them out. They came to me with the problem, I wanted to help them out. Ulubasov savar adam chashav shiny. And at the end, he realized that, you know what? Vosein adam chashav. And adam chashav atamut chacham has to rise above certain things. Sometimes, I will say, atamut chacham, it's not about helping out his family. Sometimes atamut chacham has to make the very difficult decision about, this might be good for my family, but at the end of the day, it's not the right precedent to set. So in the beginning, he was trying to help out his family, doing a good thing. In the end, he regretted it because he felt that as a person of stature, he perhaps, again, should not have manipulated the system. Says the Mishnah, remember again, we've spoken about this extensively. This is what's called ksuvas benin dichrin. So ksuvas benin dichrin means literally the ksuva of male sons, which means that a woman would have a clause written in her ksuva that her sons that she would have in the marriage with this particular man whom she's married to now, they would inherit her ksuva. Now, what does that do? What that does is it says that even if he has children from another marriage, those children will inherit in the estate, but will not inherit in my ksuva. She wants her ksuva, dafka, to go to her children. So literally, even if he didn't write for her, but in dichrin diyahavu lechim inai, the male sons that you will have with me, inun yarsuv kesek suvaseich, they will inherit the money or the value of your ksuva. Yeser alful kein demachon, more than the other portions that they inherit with their brothers. Even if a husband didn't write this in the ksuva, chayiv, it's still as if it's present in the ksuva. Why? Shud tonight bezin. Because Rabbi Yossi, remember we've seen this concept that there are certain things that are considered to be just simple enactments of bezin, and because they're enactments of bezin, even if you don't write it into the document, they are still considered to be legally binding. Similarly, beno nukvun diyahavan lechim inai. If normally you're supposed to write in the ksuba that any daughters we have together will be supported by my estate until they get married. Even if you did not write that statement within your ksuva, that obligation still stands. Chayiv, why? Shut nai bezin. Because ultimately, again, this is a condition of bezdin. The Gemara says, Atehe yasvi bevesi, umisina minachasi, kol yomi mega amalosayach bevesi. If he did not write in the ksuva that if you are widowed, if I die, you will be supported from my estate all the days that you remain a widow, meaning until you get remarried. Chayiv, that clause is still binding. Shutrai Bezin. So we'll say, what do you see from here? You see all of these clauses, either ksuvas benin dichrin, the male sons, giving the male sons the ksuva, or supporting the girls until they get married, or that you, widow, will be supported from my estate until you get remarried. even if these things are not explicitly written into the ksuva, they are still considered to be halachically binding. It's a Tanai based in. This is what, this is the type of ksuva they used to write in Jerusalem. And the people of the Galil, the north, would write their ksuvas like the men of Yerushalayim. So this is very interesting. In Yehuda, they had a very different approach. In Yehuda, what would they write? That the almana is supported. Let's say in the ksuva they would write that if a husband dies, the widow is supported from the estate as long as what? As long as the orphans want to support her from the estate. But the orphans have an interesting ability. What's their ability? They could buy her out. Now, I will say, now buyout is very simple. Buyout means they pay her out her ksuva. So they have the ability at will to say, here is the lump sum of your ksuva. Leave us on the Rabbosai. Now remember, it is not in a woman's financial best interest to get her ksuva. Why? Because when she gets her ksuva, what does she lose? She loses mezonos. So if a woman is widowed and has no immediate intentions of getting remarried, financially the best thing for her is to keep getting supported from the estate. And then at some point in time when she does get remarried, she'll get the lump sum payout of the ksuva. So under normal circumstances, according, let's say in Yerushalayim and in Galil, the right to determine whether there's mezonos or ksuva is in the hands of the woman. In Galil, they left that right with the inheritors. So should the inheritors decide, we no longer want to give you mezonos, we want to pay you out your ksuva, they have the ability to exercise that option and totally pay out. So let's just do one line, then we'll have to stop. So the Gemara says, I'm Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, Mipnei Ma Heskinu Ksuvas Binen Dichrin. Rabbi says, it's actually very interesting. Why is it that they instituted a ksuvas binen dichrin? Why did they institute this clause that the male children of the wife should inherit her ksuva? Kedei sheyikpots adam v'yichtov lebito kibno. Because the Bible said there was always a concern like this. A man is marrying off a woman, his daughter. Man is marrying off a daughter. Now, what do we want him to give her a dowry. We want him to give her a dowry. What's the concern of every father when he gives his daughter a dowry? What's the concern? Right? That guy refers to my son-in-law, right? That guy is going to inherit all the property. That chas v'shalom, should the daughter predecease her husband, he's that guy. He's going to get all the property that I worked a lifetime to go ahead and amass. Oh, and what's going to happen? Therefore, father is going to give less dowry. So how do we make the father feel more comfortable? That's what? Even if the father doesn't like that guy, who does he like? He likes his grandsons. So at least the knowledge that what? That the property that he gives to his daughter is going to go to his grandsons and is not going to be retained by that guy allows him to go ahead and give a proper dowry. So we have to stop here for today. I think tomorrow... All right, we could do it. We could do it. We know we're going to start regular time. Mishas Yisharim at 5:45. The daf will start at 6, and we'll do it. Demir Tzashem. Shkoyach.